Welcome to That's History, our regular segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and lessons from the past. I'm Chris Satullo, joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Good to be here as always.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little pop quiz here. I'm going to give you some names. Chris Christie, John Kasich, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, Mike Pence, Rick Scott, Rick Perry, Mike Huckabee, Jeb Bush. What do these men all have in common?
Well, they have a few things in common. They're all governors. They're all Republicans. And I think most importantly right now, they're all people that have been mentioned as possible presidential candidates.
And the question is, for today's segment, does a governor make a good president? Is there any indication one way or another from American history?
I'm not sure there is. Governor Christie said there is because at the Governors Association in November, you know, he got up and he said, you know, we've run things. We're executives. We can work across the aisle. And that's become the conventional wisdom, especially among governors who want to be president. Mm-hmm. But I think if you look in the past, the record is quite mixed. If you want to start with the beginning of the Republic, one of the ironies is that governors weren't considered presidential material at all. In the colonies, of course, the governors were appointed by the crown, were appointed by England. So when the country became independent, everyone was skeptical of governors. In most of the state constitutions, you were only elected governor for a year. Governorships weren't really very important. And when Tocqueville was here in the 1830s, people told him that. They said, you know, the governor only makes $1,200, and he's kind of a joke. Mm-hmm. That started to change in the mid-19th century. And in 1876, actually, both parties nominated standing governors, so a governor had to win. Actually, both of them won. It was Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden from Ohio and New York, respectively. And that was that contested election in which there was a grand bargain struck and Hayes became the president.
Right. An election much referenced during the 2000 election because it was the last time somebody lost the popular vote and won.
Indeed. And another governor, of course, became president, George Bush. Anyway, after 1877, you have the era of governors. And for 52 of the next 68 years, we have a governor in the White House and some very illustrious ones, including, of course, both Roosevelt's, Theodore and Franklin, and Woodrow Wilson. But to go back to your question, do governors make better presidents? I think we also have to remember that our former governor presidents include Grover Cleveland, William McKinley, Calvin Coolidge, Jimmy Carter, most of whom rarely get onto those top 10 president lists.
Right. But I will mention with William McKinley, he was a president whom Karl Rove admired and consciously modeled the George W. Bush presidency on.
Indeed.
But moving right along, something seems to change after Roosevelt and after World War II, and we trend away from governors for a while.
Yes. I mean, interestingly, between Truman and Carter, nobody is a governor. Everybody comes from Congress. All the presidents come from Congress, except Dwight Eisenhower, who, of course, was a general. And he was a federal general, of course, of the U.S. Army. And I think that's what's important about this World War II and Cold War period is that with so much power and so many security concerns centering in Washington, the new conventional wisdom becomes that we need a president from Washington. And that's why we get people from the Senate.
So looking to the more modern day, from the moment of, I would say the Reagan Revolution, but certainly going on from there, there is a tendency with what was called federalism to devolve many problems to the states. And the phrase became common that state capitals were the laboratories of innovation. So that creates some new buzz around governors, right?
Indeed. Then we get a new era of governors. So after Carter, including Carter, four of the next five presidents are governors. That's Carter, Reagan, Clinton, and Bush Jr. And indeed, Bush Sr. is the only one who hadn't been a governor. And a couple things are going on there. I think, first of all, you have to think about Watergate and Vietnam and the kind of anti-federal spirit that swept Carter into office, followed by, as you were referring to, the Reagan Revolution, the idea that power should be devolved to the states. And so it made sense in that idiom to have a state executive as the federal executive. And that really continued until our current chief executive, Barack Obama, who came not from the governorship but from the Senate.
All right, Jonathan Zimmerman, I'm going to ask you to do a little instant history, but looking at Barack Obama, don't you think some of the critique of his presidency lends some wind into the sails of this governor's or better, because part of the argument with Obama is in the end he showed he didn't have executive leadership. He hadn't run anything. He'd always been a lawmaker or something else. And he had a very difficult time engaging in the sausage making of compromise and getting things done.
Look, it's possible there's something to that. I mean, I would add again that not all governors have been terrific presidents. I think there's a pretty strong consensus among historians that Jimmy Carter, for example, was much better ex-president than president, in part because he didn't really have the skill to organize the federal government. So look, I think that there's a lot of credence you can give to the critique of Obama. What's interesting, though, is I'm not sure the voters are going to share it. I'm not sure the conventional wisdom this time around is correct. Whether you like Obama or not, one of the things you have to concede about his administration is that more power has centered again in the federal government. Think about immigration. Think about health care. Think about national security. And in different ways, I think you see more of a centralization of power in Washington. And so I think it's equally plausible to think that because of that, the next president is going to come from Washington for the same reason that presidents came from Washington during the Cold War era, because so much power is being centered in the national capital.
Right. And it occurs to me that we forgot one governor, or have failed to mention so far one governor who became president, Bill Clinton. But it could be argued that from the time he was 16, he was preparing to be exactly. president even while as governor.
Exactly.
We've been talking about the path to the White House, whether it runs through the State House or through the U.S. Congress, or sometimes both, with Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was fun.